dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas, and Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. I'm Diana West, sitting in for Frank Gaffney, who has graciously turned over tonight's survey of the informational battle space to me. I accept this mission with thanks. There is, of course, much to see. From the top of the new year here, 2014, we are looking ahead to some key turning points. We have elections coming up. We have congressional elections coming up in November, which we will be paying much attention to. But we also have some European elections coming up earlier in May, when over 500 million citizens who live in the countries of the European Union will be sending voters to the polls to elect a new parliament in Brussels. We don't usually think of these elections in such grand terms. 500 million people, that is a lot of people. But this is what the European Union consists of, and we may see some surprises ahead. We are looking to speak about this a little later in the show to discuss some of the quite vibrant anti-EU movements in some of the key countries in Europe, the kind of people the media look down on, down their noses at as right-wing, populist, nationalist, all of those meant as bad words, of course. Now, The Economist this week, I see, is calling these parties Tea Party groups, which is quite interesting. Now, we also have another turning point ahead coming up in Afghanistan. The U.S. mission in Afghanistan will be ending in 2014, and as far as I'm concerned, not a moment too soon. I actually first called for withdrawal back in 2009, just as the so-called Obama surge was taking shape. I came to that position due to the unbridgeable chasm that exists between Islamic culture and Western culture, that turns on the difference between cultures that are based, respectively, in Sharia law and Western liberty. Western definitions of liberty, which are quite different from definitions of liberty under Islamic law within the world of Islam. And having followed my own post 9/11 learning curve, it became clear to me, following what was a disastrous hearts and minds strategy in Iraq, infidel forces trying to win Islamic hearts and minds in Iraq in a course of nation building that has not worked, it became clear to me that this should not be repeated in Afghanistan, and yet that is where we are today, looking at the past 4 years of this same repetition. Now, some people dismiss this as racism, to suggest that a Western style of governance could not be imported into the Islamic world, and racism has absolutely nothing to do with this. This was something I believe George W. Bush discussed. But this was simply the recognition of widely diverging notions of the good life, different concepts of freedom, again, different concepts of what is godly, different concepts of rights, of the rights of minorities, and so on. And I actually have found it to be the height of Western arrogance, in fact, to assume that all people wish to adopt our ways and abandon their own. So in brief, we're looking at invading armies who are perceived as infidels coming from the West, trying to win hearts and minds in the world of Islam, and trying to do so on the basis of a strategy known as counterinsurgency doctrine. What we're looking at is not a failure of our troops, and I must emphasize that our troops have performed bravely and admirably. Troops of our allied nations have as well. This is a leadership problem. We have watched as military and civilian leaders have increasingly submitted our strategies to the dictates of Islam. And this is something that Frank Gaffney and I have often discussed here on this show. But that didn't even work either. And we're looking at a situation, a record of no matter how restrictive the rules of engagement became, no matter how much respect so-called respect our forces were ordered to show for the Quran, for example, no matter how many cups of tea they had to drink, how many hunks of goat they had to eat. And of course, these meals have left many of our forces with permanent intestinal ailments, something we don't always think about. But no matter how carefully and at what heavy cost U.S. forces avoided civilian casualties, we have not won over the people of Afghanistan to the United States side, away from the Taliban. And why is this? And why are we still not really talking about this at the leadership level? And I think one of the things we must learn from this is never, and really never, was the central influence of jihad a point of discussion in the high councils of the military and civilian leadership of our country. This did not go into strategy making. Never were the flashpoints that exist between Islamic law and Western law regarded as a point of necessary study and analysis on the part of senior leaders. On the contrary, discussing, analyzing, questioning, debating these same subjects about Islamic law, about jihad doctrine, actually became career enders. And we have watched through the Bush administration and into the Obama administration as attempts to bring a sense of reality about Islam, about culture, about the aims of Islamic law and culture into our strategy-making sessions actually cost people their jobs. It has gotten that bad. Meanwhile, we watched as our generals increasingly identified our problem as being too many civilian casualties in Afghanistan. Now, certainly in any conflict, there are always too many civilian casualties, innocents who fall into the crossfire, fall into the battlefield, and certainly Afghanistan is no different. Our generals spoke year after year about trying to lower the level of civilian casualties to zero, which sounds impossible, and yet it is amazing how close our troops have been able to bring the civilian casualty level to zero in terms of percentage versus casualties caused by Taliban and other anti-government forces. So it is with very great interest that I notice we actually now have a study coming out at the end of this involvement, at the end of this effort, that has actually looked into the efficacy of our program to win hearts and minds by reducing civilian casualties. And I refer to a report that came out in the Washington Post Online this week that discussed exactly how hard it is to win hearts and minds by eliminating civilian casualties. And this is something by Jason Lyle, and he was one of the researchers of a team that actually surveyed nearly 3,000 Afghan males in 204 villages in five predominantly Pashtun provinces to measure support for the ISAF forces, the United States Combined Forces with our allied forces, and the Taliban, and actually compared the attitudes of people who were harmed by ISAF forces versus harmed by Taliban forces. And the bottom line of this investigation was that harm by ISAF forces drove people to the Taliban, but Taliban violence did not seem to change the equation. And he actually writes, put simply, the effect of combatant violence on civilian attitudes is highly asymmetric, meaning that you see a change in the attitude of the locals toward ISAF, turning them toward the Taliban, but not changing attitudes when they are victims of Taliban violence. Harm by ISAF leads to a marked increase in support for the Taliban, whereas harm by the Taliban actually does not transfer support back to ISAF. This is the language of the report. This is something that we knew all along. We were watching this take place in real time. Certainly our forces and other allied forces could talk about this same phenomenon, not seeing allegiances switch, not seeing loyalty grows, not seeing cooperation become enduring. Certainly we see changes with influxes of cash, but that is not forever, although that is something that we do see the government, a U.S. government, attempting to essentially entrench in the arrangement with the Afghan government, which at this point the Afghan government is not accepting, and I do hope that that does remain the case. But what is the cause of that? And even in this study, we are not seeing any sort of acknowledgement that Islam plays a role, Islamic culture versus Western culture. So we are still seeing this what we've discussed is willful blindness, this seeming inability to face facts and actually evaluate them, actually try to understand them. And indeed, the language of the report blames it on cognitive biases that predispose individuals to favor or excuse the actions of their fellow in-group members. Now, I could go on reading the legalese, but you get the point. It's not something you can easily understand. We are not facing the facts about Islamic doctrine, and we are attempting to change the world and affect policy and putting troops into harm's way to do so. And this, I hope, becomes the lesson of 2014 that we finally approach with honesty and frankness and try to learn so that we do not repeat these mistakes with such devastating consequences in the future.
Listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.